Tupolok by Kevin Lenihan. Amok sat in the candlelight of her simple home and stared at the child's thigh bone in her hand, pouring her anger and rage into it. She had tried her best to procure one from a local shaman, but in the end had resorted to breaking into the morgue at the local children's hospital and carving the leg from a body there. The smell of death now pervaded the room, despite the air fresheners and scented candles burning on the dresser. It didn't really matter, though. She wouldn't have need of the room for much longer. She took a long, thin blade and drew it along one edge, shearing off a spray of bone dust. Several hours later, she had carved a crude figure of a little person, approximately 6 inches high, its little face an ugly mass of barely recognizable features, tiny little hands barely distinct as they rested on its belly above stumpy little legs, one a little thicker than the other. Her mother had promised that she would one day show her how to carve one properly, but that would never happen now. The Englishman had seen to that. She could still see his face as he apologized to her in broken Kalalasit, telling her to just relax as her mother lay dying in the passenger seat of her car. Then he had sworn at her under his breath in English, called her an hysterical fishwife, gotten back into his barely damaged pickup truck and taken off as fast as he could. She squeezed the little ivory man, blinking away tears as she knelt down on the floor and held it against her belly, slowly chanting. She did not stop for several hours, not until the sun arose the next morning. When the first rays of light came through the window, she set the little man in a wooden bowl filled with seawater on the floor in front of her, staring at it coldly. After a few seconds, the surface of the water began to ripple. As she watched, the face became more defined. The arms opened out from the body, and the little feet developed toes. Soon the horrible little totem was stretching out and yawning. It stood with the water up to its chest and looked up at her expectantly. She hadn't really thought this far ahead. Tupolok? She asked. The little figure nodded. She thought for a second and then said, Ak? The little figure nodded again, spun around on one foot, and jumped clear across the room and through the window, smashing the glass. Amok sat alone in the room, surprised that it even worked. She knew now that the only way to stop the creature and its purpose would be the act of public confession to the deed on her part. She could already feel the pang of regret and conscience begin to rear its head. Quickly, Amok grasped the jar of sleeping pills she had at the ready, unscrewed the cap and poured them into her mouth, swallowing most of them while the last few became lodged in her throat, choking her. She fell to the floor instinctively, clawing at her throat and coughing ineffectively as the world slowly took on a dull colour palette, before finally going black. It had been a long ride on a snowmobile over the tundra, but now, after 3 hours, the little outpost was finally in sight. It only consisted of a shed for the snowmobile and a relatively small building just across from it, with a large antenna sticking up from the roof where he would be living for the next 6 months, maintaining the weather station equipment. Peter adjusted his huge goggles inside his massive fur-lined hood with one gloved hand and cranked the throttle with the other as the machine picked up speed and raced across the white world. He enjoyed the sensation of speed as the outpost grew nearer, the snowmobile jumping slightly as he crested each little snowdrift. It was the same way it felt just before the crash in the city. He felt a little guilty about just taking off like that, but what the hell was he supposed to do? The way that bloody woman had been screaming at him, you'd think it was the end of the world. He couldn't stand it when people shouted, not since he was a child. His heart would start pounding and he would just run and hide in a closet until the noise stopped. In Peter's experience, people tended to do that a lot. Several of his ex-boyfriends had told him that he was just bad with people. As Peter pulled up to the metal door of the shed and dismounted, he looked around at the snowy wastes in every direction and sighed with satisfaction at the idea that there was no one around for almost 100 miles. Yes, Greenland was the place for him. He unlocked the shed, opened the big door and pushed the snowmobile inside next to one that was already in there. Behind him, a door opened and he turned to see a figure dressed in a similar coat to his, goggles on, gloves and big boots, coming out of the door of the oblong metal building. It closed the door behind it, tramped down the steps, and walked across the snow very deliberately, crunching loudly with each step. Peter waved at the figure as it drew near.
Hi, I'm Peter. I think I'm your replacement.
Don't care,
the figure grumbled as it walked past him and sat down in the second snowmobile. It pushed a button on the handle to start the engine, turned its goggled face towards him and growled,
"Move!"
Peter stepped to the side just in time to narrowly avoid being run over as the vehicle shot past and took off the way Peter had just come. He shrugged, lifted up the seat of his own snowmobile and pulled out a backpack. He walked out of the shed, closing the big metal doors behind him. After walking the small distance to the steps, he climbed them carefully, opened the door and stepped inside, pulling his hood down as he welcomed the heat that hit him. He closed the door behind him, dropped the backpack on the floor and looked around at the room he would be calling home for the next 3 months. A burr bulb hung from the ceiling and illuminated a single cot on which was a blue sleeping bag and a grey pillow. Along the wall next to this was a gas-powered stove with a large yellow natural gas bottle attached by a short blue rubber tube. Next to this, up high on the wall, was a series of cupboards, all of which turned out to contain various tinned meats and vegetables. Below these on the floor was a white chest freezer. On a little piece of paper taped to the lid were written the words, "Muskox meat, use this month." He walked through the door next to the cot and found himself in a room with a large furnace. The centre of the furnace was a squat, broad cylinder with fire burning inside. Several thin pipes ran out of it and along the bottoms of the walls, connected to the radiators that heated the building. On one side of the furnace was a tall stack of chopped wooden logs, ready to be burned. On the other side of the furnace were six large yellow gas bottles, much like the one connected to the stove in the other room. He silently resolved to move them later when he had a few minutes. Night had fallen and it was cold, colder than anything Peter had experienced in his entire life. He'd been so busy going over the weather measuring equipment that he had neglected to keep the furnace supplied with wood and it had died down to mere glowing ash. As he slowly placed one log after another into the belly of the thing, hands shaking and breath condensing in huge thick clouds in front of him, the fire began to take hold once more. Soon it was roaring again, so much that Peter thought he had maybe put a little too much fuel in, though he didn't care as he flexed his fingers in front of it and wriggled them, his numbness slowly dissipating. The burning of the wood was almost deafening now. He had definitely put too much on there. He swung shut the metal grill that served as a door for the furnace in an effort to shield his face from the heat and breathed a sigh of relief as he heard the radiators starting to make a tick-tick sound as they began to heat up. At least the pipes hadn't frozen, he thought to himself. Just then there was a terrible pounding at the door. Peter felt himself jump an inch off the floor in fright before he spun around and stepped over to the doorway that led into the living area, weather station, front room, whatever it was. For a brief moment he considered not answering the door. He could feel his heart pounding in his chest at the thought of interacting with another person this unexpectedly. He reached two fingers up to his neck and felt his pulse thump thump thumping as his jugular vein almost seemed like it would explode out of his neck. After a few moments, when there was no further knocking, he approached the door and drew back the thin net curtain that covered the thick glass. There was only blackness and the sound of the wind. Peter reached across to a switch by the door, activating the floodlights outside. The white of the snow reflecting the light between here and the snowmobile shed was dazzling, though it didn't prevent him from observing one important detail. The door of the snowmobile shed was open. It was only a few inches ajar, swinging ever so slightly in the breeze, but he was certain he had locked it earlier. Nothing else moved but for the odd single flake of snow coming in at a steep angle, spurred on by the icy winds. He knew the snowmobiles were built to withstand the cold to a certain degree, but not for a sustained period of time with the engine off. He would have to go out there and see to it. Perhaps it was just his counterpart who he had seen making his swift exit earlier. Maybe his vehicle had broken down and he had come back for help. Or perhaps he hadn't. He felt his heart rate start to rise again at the thought of all the terrible things that could be out there waiting for him in the snow. Suddenly he remembered a conversation he'd had with the woman who'd hired him for the job. She had made a passing mention of polar bears and had also mentioned the fact that they were one of the few animals that would actively hunt humans. His eyes grew wide at the thought of an army of polar bears all standing in the snow, just outside the pool of light, shrouded in the darkness, waiting. Perhaps that's why his predecessor had been so keen to leave. He looked around the room and spied the fire axe, suspended in its glass case next to the furnace room door. As he looked around further, he spied, on top of one of the cabinets, a long wooden box. He grabbed a chair and dragged it over, stood up in it, and lifted the box down carefully. He placed it gently on the cot and undid the latch. Then he lifted the lid and, for a moment, was relieved to see the long metal barrel and wooden stock of a Winchester rifle. His relief was short-lived, however, as it dawned on him that this particular piece was all but an antique. It was probably older than he was. He picked it up and held it in front of him and, with some difficulty, pulled the bolt back. A brass rifle shell shot out of the breech and hit him hard in the nose, bouncing across the room and under the oven. He dropped the rifle on the floor, the impact separating the barrel from the stock, a small puff of rust briefly spewing out of the end of the gun, as if the thing was coughing its last. He held his nose and screwed up his eyes as a small trickle of blood ran out of his nostril.
"Fuck this!"
he said as he stomped across the room, picked up his coat and balaclava from the floor where he had thrown them, and put them on. Then he pulled open the door of the glass box on the wall and removed the fire axe. He swung it experimentally a few times to test the weight, and then held it awkwardly at his side as he walked over to the door, placed his hand on it, and tried to think of anything but polar bears. He pulled the door open and was immediately winded by the shock of the cold. It was much worse than he had been expecting, especially with the biting wind that had gotten up since sundown. He stepped outside and held the axe out in front of him in what he thought was a menacing pose, but in reality made it look more like he was afraid that the thing might explode at any moment. He took a deep breath and shouted as loudly as he could towards the shed.
"I say, I have an axe, you know."
He knew it sounded stupid as the words left his mouth, but he could think of nothing else.
"I hope you know you trespass."
The wind slammed the door shut behind him with a loud bang.
"Show yourself."
There was no reply, but the blowing of the wind. Peter looked around at the darkness just beyond the reach of the lights, searching for evidence of polar bears. There were no telltale paw prints in the snow, or any other tracks but his own, and that of the man who had left upon his arrival. Had he imagined the knocking? Maybe the cold had gotten to him. Perhaps it was just a bit of luck that it had prompted him to look out here and notice that the shed door was faulty. Emboldened by this rationalization, he made his way slowly down the steps and across the small distance to the shed, the hairs on the back of his neck standing on end the entire time. He pulled open the door with a dramatic, "Aha!" as he challenged the darkness with the axe. When no response came, he steeled himself, stepped into the blackness, and reached out to where he remembered the light switch being on the wall. He felt his hand rest on something hard and pushed. The switch clicked and flooded the room with light, exposing something which chilled Peter to the bone. The snowmobile was in pieces, strewn all around the shed, too many to count. Peter looked down at his feet to see parts of the mechanism of the door's lock lying on the wooden floor. He knelt down in a sort of a shocked daze and lifted a little metal tumbler. It looked like there were dents in the side of it, as if it had been gnawed by tiny teeth. His investigation was cut short as the sound of a door slamming behind him gave him cause to spin around. The front door of the shack across the way was still reverberating, but there was no doubt now it was no polar bear. He felt himself briefly rooted to the spot, paralysed by indecision. There was certainly someone in the shack, someone who wished him harm, though if he stayed where he was, he would surely freeze given a few more minutes. His heart beat so loudly in his ears now that it drowned out the sound of his panicked short breaths. He grit his teeth, gripped the axe tightly, and ran through the snow up the steps and kicked the door, hurting his foot rather a lot, but succeeding in knocking the door open. He jumped into the warmth of the room with the axe raised over his head and once again shouted, "Aha!" But there was no one there. He looked nervously at the door to the furnace room and cleared his throat.
"Come on out now. There's nowhere to go."
The only response was the roaring of the furnace, seeming louder now. After a moment came the metallic creak of the furnace door swinging open, followed by a dull thunk sound.
"There really is no sense in this. I don't mind if you want to share my fire."
He certainly did mind, but right now he would have said anything to make this stop. There was another loud, dull thunk. He edged over towards the door as another thunk reverberated from the room. He slowly leaned around the edge of the doorway and saw a tiny, ivory-coloured figure on the floor, little more than a few inches high, picking up one of the wood logs in both of its tiny little hands and throwing it with deft accuracy into the open maw of the furnace. When it landed inside, there came another loud, dull thunk as the flames rose even higher. The metal at the bottom of the furnace had begun to glow a deep, dark red.
"Oh, shit!"
he found himself saying reflexively. The little figure stopped in its work, still holding a small log it had picked up, and turned around slowly. It looked to Peter like one of the garden gnomes his mother had been so fond of, though it was coloured all over bone white. Its mouth was as wide as its head, and, as it stared at him, its triangular eyes gave it an unmoving expression of absolute malevolence. It drew its little arm back and threw the log, hitting Peter square between the eyes. The sudden shock and pain gave him an unexpected adrenaline surge, and, knowing if he ran outside he would be a dead man from the cold, took a swing at the thing on the floor. The little figure moved so quickly he barely noticed as the axe blade buried itself in the floorboards. He looked around and saw the thing sitting on the plastic tip of one of the large yellow gas bottles next to the furnace. It had procured itself another small log from somewhere and was waving it around as if to taunt him. Peter tugged at the axe, but it was stuck firmly in the floor. He let go of the handle and wiped the sweat from his forehead with his coat sleeve. He looked over at the little thing, his face a mask of confusion and revulsion as it gesticulated at him. Then, without warning, it flung the piece of wood it was holding, hitting him hard on the nose, right where the rifle shell had hit him earlier. A terrible base rage welled up inside him as he grasped the axe handle and pulled it with renewed vigour, tearing it free of its mooring in the floorboard and lifting it above his head in an awkward arc. What happened next seemed to Peter to happen very slowly. As he brought the axe down hard towards the thing, it didn't even try to get out of the way. It held both its stubby little arms straight out, horizontally, as if welcoming the blow. If Peter had time to ponder this, he probably would have been puzzled, though as it was, the weight of the speed of the axe left him little time for contemplation as the blade split the little monster right down the middle, first splitting its head, then its torso, and then sailing down between its legs and into the plastic stopper on the top of the gas bottle, splitting it in two easily. Peter's eyes grew wide as the sound of rushing gas hit his ears before a huge whoomph filled the cabin as the fire from the furnace leapt out to meet it. The pain was intense. And then it wasn't anymore. There were several more explosions as the remaining gas bottles ignited, though the first had already done its work. The cabin was in bits, charred all around, leaving only the blackened, distended remnants of the furnace, a man's smouldering remains, and a broken figure carved from the broken bone of a child by a bitter, broken daughter.